Them and you the banners. All right, let's
see. All right, we're live.
All right, we're live, baby.
Yep.
All right, let's wait a few seconds, let everybody know we up in here. While we're doing that, I'll get these banners situated real fast. And we'll kick this thing off. Let's see. Present, past. Oh, we got tonight, Kansas City. Commanders. I go a couple of our guys coming in here. Chiefs. 9-11. Coming on in here. We're about to start in a few minutes, guys. Give us 1 second.
All right, I think we got some people in here. If you're ready to get this started.
Yep, let's kick it off right now, finishing up these last banners so that everybody can see what we're talking about while we make the plays or talk about these games real fast. Well, the last one, you tip it, Kent. Last one right here, guys, and we finished. All right, let's kick this show off. What's good, Wagering World? It's your boy, Five Star in Vegas, broadcasting live as always from beautiful Summerlin, Nevada. This is the Wagering World. I'm in here with my co-host, man. He's been with me since day one, the OG of the show, the only Sacramento Kings fan that I know. What's good, Spreaderster? How are you today?
Yeah, I'll probably continue to be the only Sacramento Kings fan because if I was a young man and I was watching these teams, I don't know if I could start rooting for the Kings. They fall last night to the Lakers with no Luka, no LeBron. They give up 51 points to Austin Reeves. To be fair, the officiating was a little janky, but they shouldn't even have been in that position. I think, boy, the two teams I root for, Raiders and Kings, I don't know who's worse. But you had some things going on with your favorite team this weekend. Let's go to the world of college football. Five star, it was kind of, you know, almost bittersweet. I had a little play on LSU. I thought they were going to get things done. But the loss to Texas A&M was the final straw. No more Brian Kelly. How are you feeling today as a whole new world, a new rain, a ray of sunshine in Louisiana as you have the opportunity for a new coach?
It was a great weekend for Louisiana, period. Even though the Tigers lost, it was one of those situations where a loss is a win. First, we had the Versus out here in Las Vegas with No Limit versus Cash Money. That was really a solid performance and brought back some great memories from my childhood. And then we also had Grambling State University came out here and played Jackson State for a big HBCU game. And my alma mater, Grambling, gets the upset victory over the number one team in the HBCU. It's crazy that the effects of Coach Prime, because Jackson State was not a good team before he got there, had many years of losing, and now they've carried on the tradition that he kind of set up over there. But the Grambling State gets it done as the most winningest program in the HBCU. My Grambling Tigers get the upset. I do want to say prayers up for Sazabian Tezzet, or, you know, people call him Zay Tezzet, quarterback for Grambling State. Man, he transferred in from our arch rival, Southern University, and did a really good job this year. He was scrambling for a first down, man, and took a horrible hit. Ended up being unresponsive for a little while on the field over there at Allegiant Stadium. And the ambulance came and got him. He ended up coming to a local hospital here in Las Vegas. I'm hearing from their coach, Mickey Joseph, that he is doing better. He is responsive now. So let's pray for healing for that kid and hope all is well with him. The big news was the firing of Brian Kelly. I had first half with LSU plus a half. They get the job done, went 18-14. I give out the full game online with a little video because we was at home cooking gumbo, getting ready for the weekend for LSU and for the Texans. And, man, even though we lost the play, I'm sorry for the free play guys who lost that one with me. I was at home doing a dance because I knew after seeing that second half performance by LSU that it was nowhere in hell that Brian Kelly was going to be the quarterback, be the head coach, excuse me, of my LSU Tigers by the time Monday came. It just was not happening. Props, first of all, to Mike Elko and the job he's doing at Texas A&M. My guy Todd Ferguson, who runs 97.5, he's the station manager this morning, and told him, thank you. He's an A&M grad. I said, thank you, man, for getting rid of Brian Kelly for us, man. But A&M, Elko's done a great job. The biggest thing for A&M that I like is the quarterback, man. This is the first time they had a dynamic quarterback. Kyler Murray was supposed to play this role, but ended up not working out because Kevin Sumlin and his undisciplined ways kind of ran Kyler off. But now they have that guy, Marcel Reed, just like Kyler, a guy who's a head coach's son. His dad was a coach in college, I mean high school. And now he's getting it done for A&M. Dominant performance by them. LSU couldn't do anything with them. But most of all, I see that LSU was just quit on the team. As we see now, I'm hearing that Harold Perkins said he's not even playing the rest of the year. I don't know if he's going to go in the draft or go into the transfer portal. But it's just really sad the condition that LSU football is in. Me being a guy who played football in high school in Louisiana, I know it's the best competition in the world, man. I came right out of District 258, and I have no doubt in my mind that LSU produces the best high school football players in the whole world. And the reason why is because it's a different level of need for a kid that comes out of Louisiana, a different level of poverty that they deal with. And a lot of them, the only way that they're going to ever get from out of the circumstances that they are in is through football. And football is still preached in Louisiana as the way to get out of your bad condition and to, you know, help your family, even if your family isn't on a poverty scale, and you got both parents working. Louisiana is one of the poorest states in the world, man, and the government there doesn't give back anything to the people. So it always creates a different type of hunger in a kid that plays in LSU. Great competition, just something to water down there where produce just a lot of great athletes. So it's no excuse at all for Brian Kelly ever to struggle the way that he did. I never got the hire. You remember, Spread, when they made the hire, I did not like it, man. I did not like it at all. I was very upset that they took him. I wanted him the following year, after only being there 1 year, to take the Michigan job, because people were saying, like, you know, like, he might go to Michigan. He's been waiting on that job. Well, that would do him better. He's a Midwest guy. Go over there, because we do not want you in the state of Louisiana. He does not fit what we have in that state and how seriously we take LSU football, man. Through 4 years, Spread, he had no SEC championships and had not been to the college football playoffs. The previous three coaches, three completely different coaches, and Nick Saban, Les Miles, and Coach Orgeron, had all won in within 4 years an SEC title and a national championship, because that's the type of talent that comes through Louisiana. Shout out to my boy Joe. He was a Ruston guy, man. He knows all about District 25A, man. I'm a Monroe, Louisiana guy, man, and it's the best football in the world right there in the state of Louisiana. So I look forward to the new coach. I started a petition a couple weeks ago to get Brian Kelly fired and to hire John Gruden. Now, as I'm hearing a couple people say John Gruden's name, I think he'll be perfect for LSU. I think he has the swagger. I think he has the expertise. I think he has the acumen to come in there and really be a hit. The guys are going to love him. The mamas are going to love him when he comes in the living room to talk to him. He's a very familiar face. He has the energy. He understands the LSU culture, and that in order to be down here in LSU, man, you got to be fired up and you got to be aggressive, because that's what LSU football has always been about. And somehow Brian Kelly, I'm not going to say somehow, because we all know that all teams take on the personality of their coaches. And Brian Kelly is just a different type of cat, man. And I didn't like how the LSU program had became under him. So it's a day of celebration for me. We're glad that the Wicked Witch is dead.
All right. So that's what we saw there. Kind of like a win, even though it'll show a loss in the loss column. What happened with SMU? They headed out to Wake Forest. A complete no-show there. Were you shocked?
Man, Kevin Jennings was playing like Terry Rozier. So I don't know what he was on. I don't know who got to him. I was just watching all these different stuff. Now all of a sudden these mob guys are coming out the out the woods, Spread out. Any guy who's like Italian with some black greasy hairs all of a sudden in front of a microphone, I guess that they feel this is their opportunity to get some shine so they can write a book or something. So now everyone's talking about, you know, how every game is fixed, and we already knew that, and that the players are compromised. But man, Kevin Jennings looked compromised. He looked nothing like himself. I love Jake Dickard. I love that Wake Forest program because of him and how he's kind of taken it and made it into his image, as we just were talking about, teams taking on the personality of their coaches. They're a tough team, but they have no business playing with SMU, and I think that this is going to get Brett Lashley out of there. I think Brett Lashley end up coaching either at Auburn, probably Auburn. I'm going to say Auburn is where Brett Lashley ends up at. He's too good of a coach to be down there trifling with all this stuff that these Dallas kids are doing at SMU. I don't know what that was all about. He called a great game, and Kevin Jennings couldn't throw a quarter into the ocean for some reason that game. Even after all of that, I took a money line. Even after all of that, they were up 12-10 with the ball, and the game should have been over. Kevin Jennings is scrambling, could have easily got the first down. He steps out of bounds 1 yard before the marker. They could have took knees after that. It just was silly, man. It looked really, really suspect, man. So, Kevin Jennings, we got the big eye on you, man. I'm going to start calling you Terry Rozier. I don't know what you up to, man, but you cost them that game. Next play, Wake Forest with their transfer quarterback comes in. Robert Ashford was who we were hoping was going to play. He did play some, and they were able to contain him while he was the quarterback. But when the backup came in, he throws a 40-yard strike that gets them in field goal range, and Wake Forest is able to walk it off and break my heart as I had a heavy investment in that game and my group as we went 10 units on that game. So that one really hurt. Besides that one, though, we had a spectacular day, but we had to catch up on those units.
All right, let's keep it moving here. One thing that didn't shock us was that Kansas State continued its dominance, 17th straight victory over the Kansas Jayhawks. And of course, you know, they covered because they were catching points there. I don't know how you beat a team 17 straight times and you get some points, but that's what happened there. Any thoughts there on K-State, or you want to just keep it moving because it was what we expected?
Yeah, just a great job. We talked about it last week. I think I spoke to it with Jay Money and with Ski that Kansas State takes beating Kansas so serious that the last time a Kansas State head coach was fired, he lost to Kansas. So with Chris Klieman being on the hot seat like he is, it was no way that he was going to lose this game. Rough start. Kansas State fumbled the initial kickoff right out the door, and Kansas scores in like the first minute. But the next drive, K-State goes right down. Avery Johnson with a really good drive, and they took control and never looked back, man. So easy cash for us there. That should have been a 10-unit play for the group. Instead, we played it like 2 units. So that's my bad on that one, private group.
All right. Let's keep it moving there for more of the football that we saw on Saturday. BYU gets it done, +3 at Iowa State, a team that we think is pretty good. BYU looking to be the real deal. How far can this BYU team go?
I love that team, man. I love Coach Satake. He's a long time been a guy that I admire for the way that he has his team ready. And he turned BYU from being a school that was known for passing the ball and throwing around into a physical team. He realized that in order to compete in today's college football landscape, he had to recruit guys who could get aggressive and physical on that line and dominate up front. Did a really good job of tapping into, like, who he is, a Samoan market, and getting a lot of good defensive linemen over there. And he found any guy who was Mormon in the whole United States that could play and got him over there, man. Just a great job by him with recruiting. That team is so sound. I love Chase Roberts. I've been watching this kid at wide receiver for a second, and I think that Chase Roberts has a chance of playing in the NFL. I don't know what his 40 time is going to say when he goes to the combine, but he sure is always open. And Bear Bachmeyer is the best freshman quarterback we've seen in a long time in college football, man. Where's number 47? Now that there's no rules in the NFL on jerseys, I wonder if he continues to wear 47 if he gets drafted in 3-4 years. Hopefully he doesn't fall off like his brother. His brother is Hank Bachmeyer, who came in with Boise State as a freshman and was really impressive. But as the years came by, he didn't deal well with the success he had his freshman year, and had a couple of injuries, and ended up transferring to 3 or 4 schools and never becoming the guy that I thought he was going to be his freshman year. So it's kind of, you know, scary when guys are so good as a freshman like Bear Bachmeyer is. You wonder if they're going to plateau, and hopefully he doesn't. Hopefully he keeps working on his game. Hopefully he doesn't get caught up in the party scene too much and everyone patting him on the back. But he's an outstanding player, and he's the leader of that team, even though he's a freshman. And the toughness that he brings at quarterback kind of sets them up right along with Satake and how he preaches physical toughness and playing smart. They go into Iowa State, get their first win ever against Iowa State. They faced each other 5 times before, and Iowa State came out the door really serious. They were running the ball all over BYU in the first half. Set up me a really good position because I was able to jump in and take BYU at +240. And right when I took them, they went on a run, and the game wasn't really close by the end. So Matt Campbell tried to have his guys ready. He just doesn't have the type of team that's going to compete. He's another guy to watch. Matt Campbell's been at Iowa State a really long time. I think he's too good of a coach to continue to stay there with that, you know, meh talent. Maybe it's time for Matt Campbell to think about going somewhere else and trying to see if he could do something better with more resources. Great job by BYU. They're setting themselves up for a college football playoff run. Looks like they may be in the championship game in the Big 12.
All right. And we talked last week about Vanderbilt. They got the cover against Missouri. What do you think of the Commodores now?
Man, I had Missouri in this game, and Missouri should have won this game. They shut down Diego Pavia. Just a great job by that defense. I'm a big fan of Eli Drinkwitz, who's the head coach for Missouri, and he did a hell of a job of having those kids ready to play. Just bad break, bad handicap, completely bad break, literally, as Bo Pribula breaks his ankle, dislocates his ankle right at the goal line, and that could have tied the game up right there. The problem that I had with Missouri's play calling, even right there when he got hurt, I think that Pribula is too good of a player to just mash on a play like that inside and try to, you know, run a quarterback draw from the one. They did like a fake pitch, and then he just ran into the line full speed, ends up getting caught, and someone has his ankle down below, and someone hits him high, and just a nasty break. And I just hope that from this, Drinkwitz learns, like, you got to protect your quarterback, especially when you have good ones. I know you like to go 11-man run game because you get an advantage because you have one extra man when the quarterback's in the run game. But some of these guys are too precious in order to lose, man. You got to protect your quarterback. The backup Zollers came in and did a really good job. I'm not going to lie. That kid put them in position to win. He even threw a great Hail Mary at the end of the game that Missouri actually caught, and the kid was 1 inch from tying the ball game up. My take from this is both of these are really good teams, but I think the Diego Pavia is about to get exposed a little bit more as the weeks go by. His numbers don't fit the narrative. He does bring the moxie, and he does bring the entertainment. He brings, you know, that little extra that Vanderbilt needs to give them confidence. We always talk about when you have a quarterback that you know can win the game for you, the whole team's going to play better. So, yeah, he has brought that. But for them to talk about him in the Heisman race is ridiculous. He's not a Heisman candidate. He hasn't played Heisman-type football. He has helped Vanderbilt really become a better team, but it's more than just him. It has a lot to do with the team around him as well. But he does get a pat on the back for me for bringing the energy that he does. He's a winning-type player. So good job by him. Good job by Vanderbilt as they continue to surprise people in the SEC.
All right, let's keep it moving. Let's talk about what we saw on Sunday. You know, talk about the LSU won, but they lost. The Giants lost, and they lost because they lost Cam Scataboo, and I think that he was the type of player that statistics can't necessarily measure his impact to the team. You get a guy like that running through a wall, it just kind of fires everybody up. And I felt like the youth and intensity that him and Dart were bringing kind of was going hand in hand, really helping Dart make the transition as his first year as a starter. So how dire are things for the New York Giants losing Cam Scataboo? I know that, you know, a lot of a running back's production is directly tied to his offensive line, but this feels like a pretty big downgrade from what Scataboo is able to do on the ground. And Tyrone Tracy's a fine running back. I just don't know if he has that same ability to kind of break tackles and make plays like Scataboo does. What are your thoughts on that game? The Eagles get another cover. I mean, they haven't been very impressive there, but they keep racking up wins, and they're going to be around and ready to go when these playoffs kick off. I want to know more of your takeaways of the Giants. I mean, this is what I expect from the Eagles. They're going to kind of struggle this year as far as covering spreads and looking great goes, but that's kind of what happens when you're coming off that Super Bowl winning year. And we've seen Kansas City do it too, where you're kind of treating the regular season like the NBA. You try new things, you're working things out, you know, new coordinators, stuff like that. Talk to me about what you saw there, but especially the impact this is going to have on the New York Giants.
Yeah, that one was tough, man. I hated seeing that. And his ankle, kind of like Pribula, was just – it was dislocated in a really funny way. Like, it was pointing the opposite way of what it was supposed to be. Hip tackle by Zach Bond. You know, like, I don't know what the NFL is going to have to do. It started with Terrell Owens, and he made – you remember, that's what started the outlawing of the hip tackle, the hip drop tackle. And defenders are still doing it, man. And Zach Bond definitely did it to Scataboo, man. You know, it's a way that they can kind of ride you. And then if they fall down on your legs, you're in a compromised position, man. And I hate to see it, man. Hopefully they I know they've been fining guys, but man, it needs to get to the point where they start suspending these guys a game or two for these hip drops, because it just puts the running back or receiver or quarterback at just a horrible disadvantage, man. You know, make a form tackle. You know, you don't have to drop your weight on people's lower extremities. Things are going to happen in the game, but when I see tackles like that, I feel like you're trying to hurt somebody, man. So I hope, prayers up for that kid. Hopefully he gets better soon. The league needs Cam Scatterboo. He was bringing a lot of energy just to the league as a whole, not only just the Giants locker room. So hopefully that's something he can recover from. We know he'll be out the rest of this year, but hopefully he'll be ready next year when football starts. Hopefully he heals well from that injury. It's an injury we saw with Dak Prescott, and honestly, Dak hasn't really been the same as far as in foot speed since then. So hopefully this kid, he's a hard worker. Hopefully he gets it together. We had the Eagles on this game. I gave it out on Jay Money Show. I knew that this was a bounce back spot. Also a spot where they were embarrassed by the Giants on Thursday Night Football. They weren't going to allow them to come to Philadelphia and do that. Eagles offense looks completely different without A.J. Brown. Kind of like what we're going to talk about a little bit later with the Texans with Nico out. Sometimes you have these wide receiver ones, and it's pressure on the quarterback to look their way instead of looking at the whole field. And I think that moving forward, the Eagles might be better with trading A.J. Brown in the offseason. You know, I think that it'll take a lot of pressure off of Jalen Hurts. We know that they're friends going way back, but you know about frenemies. You can be friends so long that people get too comfortable with you. And next thing you know, the guy who used to be your boy now is kind of looking at you side-eyed. And I think that's what's going on with the Eagles. A.J. Brown has his championship ring. I think he has high aspirations from a statistical point of view and wants to be a Hall of Fame type player. And to do so, he's not going to ever do it with the Eagles. But if you look on the other side of the ball at Smitty came from that type of situation with Alabama, man, and still was able to win the Heisman Trophy, still was able to put up record numbers because Coach Saban seen the type of kid he was and how good he was and just said, you know what, even though we run the ball a lot, we're going to highlight this kid in the passing game. And the thing about Smith, he blocks hard, man. He's 100, probably 80 pounds soaking wet, but he gives it his all on blocking and just being a team guy. He's never going to complain. And when he gets the ball, he's going to make something happen with it, man. He's always open. So I would not be surprised if he becomes the wide receiver number one in the offseason and A.J. Brown ends up getting moved over there with the Eagles. Maybe he goes to the Patriots and, you know, goes back with his boy Vrabel. Vrabel definitely likes him. The Giants. Yeah, that'll be. Go ahead, Spread. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was just going to say that'll be interesting to see where he ends up. But I think they definitely need him for their run this year. But I can see them already getting ready to move on. And you have to wonder at what point, how long can he be a top receiver for? I would say maybe 3 more years. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there with AJ, but I'm with you. I think this will be his last year, with there. What happens with the Giants now, man? Do you think they can still make a push?
They're not making the playoffs. They shouldn't even want to. Actually, if they're smart, they allow Dabo to keep developing Dart. I'm seeing so many good things out of Dart that I did not expect, because thing that worried me about Dart, I don't know what happened. Somewhere, maybe Dabo gave him confidence again, but man, he was confident like that as a freshman with USC running around. I was like, this kid is going to be special. Then he got to Ole Miss, and inside SEC play, he wasn't that good, man. The bigger the game was, the smaller that he got. But now it seems like Dabo has pumped that confidence back into that kid, or maybe it was him being around Scatterboo in the locker room. But now he's fearless, man, and he, not only is he fearless, he's making some pretty good throws, man, especially on the deep balls. And so I think he has a real, real opportunity, a real, real opportunity, man, in order to become one of those guys that is a Giants, you know, legend, a guy that they talk about for a long time, as long as he can stay healthy. So they're moving in the right direction. They got a great defensive line. They need to try to work on. You got Malik Nabers coming back next year, so you already got your wide out. You got your running back. Scatterboo's okay, and as you said, Tracy's good. Just keep him again. I think that they need to start adding to their defense. So, especially a defensive backfield. They're a team that would really do well trying to get Caleb Downs from Ohio State. He would be a huge difference maker for them on defense. So if I'm them, I'm trying to position myself in the draft. I'm not really caring too much about making the playoffs this year.
Well, I don't know if the fans and that ownership has the same long-term perspective that you do. So it's interesting to see how the Giants do moving forward. One team that's definitely making a push this year, however, is the New England Patriots. Drake May continues to improve there under head coach Josh McDaniels, and it shows you – or not head coach, offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. But it shows you how much good coaching can do as the Patriots seem completely turned around from last year. And, of course, they have made some improvements, but that's mostly the same roster. The Browns, once again, look terrible. Feels like it's time, five-star. We've been calling for it since the draft. But maybe it's time to let the best quarterback under center. Do you think they're finally going to do it? I mean, that's all I have to talk about. Miles Garrett's awesome. Good for him. Let's try and get him a quarterback back there and give him a reason for those five sacks that he keeps getting and these records he keeps setting. Give him a little bit of complimentary football, the one that they like to use there. Is it time, man? Is this whole little Dylan Gabriel so obvious he was a backup looking at the tape? The time for this experiment to end? Can we see what Sanders has?
We're not going to, because Kevin Stefanski, for some reason, doesn't like Shador. He just doesn't like him. He doesn't like him, man. He's not going to give him an opportunity. That's why you see he made him inactive this week. Nobody – he wasn't hurt. Like, so I think it's going to boil down to Andrew Berry and the owner deciding to move on from Kevin Stefanski and bringing in a coach who understands that they need to play Shador Sanders. One, you have him on a fifth-round contract. Why wouldn't you try to get the most out of this kid the next 3 years for the low? Because after he plays, he's going to demand a much higher contract. So I don't understand anything Stefanski's doing. He just went to the press, and, of course, you know, the Cleveland media is getting tired of this mess. Even the guys who don't like Shador at the beginning of the year and had every excuse and were kind of like running with the mob and just agreeing with everybody that he was a bad kid, even though nothing ever showed that he was a bad kid, they're now pressing Stefanski because they're wondering, like, what the hell do we have to lose by throwing him out there? This kid is horrible. You know, he should have had about 6 interceptions this year. He's had 4 of them that I've counted with my own eyes get overturned by the referees for different reasons, whether it was defensive illegal contact away from the ball, holding away from the ball, or something like that. But he's just not good. He's not equipped. I was looking at Keyshawn Judkins, who's a running back standing next to him. Keyshawn Judkins looked like a grown man standing next to a baby, man. He like Gabriel looked like a toddler standing next to his running back. How many times have we seen a running back taller than the quarterback? Like, so they're going to have to do something, man. They've already made the decision in the building, at least in Stefanski's office. He's not playing Shador. And I don't see why Stefanski gets so much leeway with that organization. It's just because he won the Coach of the Year twice, because we talked about that. The 2 times he won Coach of the Year are his only 2 winning seasons. And in those seasons, he went 11-6. The rest of the way, he has a suck-ass record, bro. He has a complete losing record. He has a losing record overall anyway. I want to say he's now 42-48 or something like that for his career. But if you subtract those 2 11-win seasons, it's completely worse than that. So I don't know what's going on with Stefanski. It's some of the weirdest stuff that I've ever seen, how he keeps holding on to this stuff, man. Like, and it's so obvious. He's just like, we're going to continue with Dylan after the bye. I'm like... So, I think Shador is going to have to outlast Stefanski to get an opportunity. But let's talk about the good stuff over here. You remember before the season started, I said the biggest – we were talking about what did we think were the biggest offseason moves the teams made. And I told you guys the biggest offseason move that I felt was made were the Patriots going to grab Mike Vrabel, who understands their culture and is a hell of a coach. One of their greats from the past, who also knows X's and O's, one of the best coaches in the league, coming back over there. And we see the results, as now the Patriots are at the top of the AFC East for the first time in a long time. Drake May is in consideration for the MVP. All of that's Vrabel. You remember I said before, I like Drake May's athleticism. I didn't know if he had it between the ears, because he tends to make a lot of mistakes when he, you know, from the pocket. He didn't really see the field well at North Carolina, but he's a hell of an athlete. His brother was a star player for the basketball team, played power forward, won the national championship. I think Luke May was player of the year that year as well. His dad played basketball in North Carolina. He was the first one to venture into football. And the Lord blessed him where he didn't get 6'8", 6'9", because if he had been 6'8", 6'9", like his brother, he would have not probably been a good quarterback like he is. He got the perfect size at 6'4". But Josh McDaniel is doing a good job of teaching this kid how to play quarterback, because he already has the athleticism. We know that. So just a good job by the Patriots, man, overall. And Drake May is right now one of the top quarterbacks in the league. I'm really impressed by that kid. I always knew he had it with his legs and had the arm. I'm now really want to give him his card for being a really better pocket passer. And what a great job of them by going to get Stephon Diggs. I think that the leadership we saw with the Texans last year and our success that we had with that receiving core, I like that Stephon Diggs has matured into the type of guy who understands his roles. Yeah, I'm going to get 4 or 5 looks a game, but my job is to come here and show these kids how to be pros. I've already made millions and millions of dollars. I've been the guy before. They'll never be able to take the Minnesota Miracle from me. Let me help this team get better in the wide receiver room. And he's done a great job over there. Those young wide receivers are producing for the Patriots. I like everything that the Patriots are doing. I know that they're kind of bad on the back end at defense, but they got playmakers. I think that's why they give up a lot of points in the back end and give up a lot of plays, because they got guys who are trying to pick the ball off and trying to call stuff, man, in the back of that defense. So I like the Patriots. I like where they're going, and the Patriots swag is back thanks to Mike Vrabel.
All right. I got another question for you. Are the Texans back? They get it done against the beat-up San Francisco 49ers team, but we know in this league, every win counts. What are your thoughts there on the Houston Texans?
I feel like the Texans never left. The problem has been inconsistency, and the inconsistency is coming from just habits, man. Nick Caley is learning on the job, and that's something that Texans fans are going to have to accept. He's getting better. You know, like each week he's making little tweaks. What happened when they played on Monday night? He went against a defensive master in Mike McDonald, and they were sharp from coming from playing the following week. And some teams just don't handle bye weeks good. Houston is one of those markets. Miami, Atlanta, you don't want to have a bye week with your players in those markets. You know, they're going to go out and have a good time. It's no way around it, because they're getting a week off. They can finally take a breath, and the party scenes and the women are just too much to deal with. So they weren't really focused, and they weren't sharp when they went to Seattle. They make the adjustments. They get it together this week. The main thing that I loved about CJ's performance is everything I've been talking about. It's not the offensive line. It never really was. The offensive line has been really good, especially that kid Ursay from Texas Tech. He's going to end up being all pro. That kid can play, man. He's a really good offensive lineman, and I think he's going to anchor that line in the years to come. The line hasn't been the problem. The problem was that CJ was not getting clear reads pre-snap. So when he was hitting his back foot, he wasn't letting the ball go. He was overthinking. He was holding the ball too long. This week he did a good job of just getting through his reads quick and processing, which we know CJ can do really well. That's another reason why I said what I said about Nico. Nico Collins, it might be time to even think about, hey, if they could trade him in the offseason, I'd move him. I know he's a good player. He gives you no problems. But sometimes these type of receivers who have these big contracts, the quarterback feels like he has a responsibility to get them involved in the passing game. And it makes it where you're locked in on one guy instead of just running the play. That's the problem. At Ohio State, CJ, everybody was All-American who was out there receiving. So it wasn't any favors. He just got the ball to whoever was open. He's going to have to take that approach with the Texans. I honestly feel like this Iowa State wide receiver core we have, Xavier Hutchinson, he's the older one that's been there a couple years. Jalen Noel, who has a chance to be a great player in this league. He is good in the slot. I always impressed him at Iowa State with his hands. And on the other side, his buddy who played with him right there in college was Higgins. Higgins is the same as Nico Collins, just without the contract. He's the same height, same ability to make tough catches. If I'm the Texans in the offseason, I think I'd move off of Nico Collins, man, if Tank Dell's coming back. Because now you got a whole bunch of speed and quickness in space, and you don't have that big contract. Y'all can take that money and go put that money into the offensive line. You've got your running back now with the Texans and Woody Marks. Woody Marks is going to be the running back one moving forward. Awesome player. He was great at Mississippi State, great with USC. He's still good in the NFL. He's an every down back. So now if and when my guy comes back, the normal running back comes back, guess what? Now you have an option with Mixon. Do you want to keep Mixon or you want to go Marks? If Mixon's contract is team friendly and fits into what you want to do with the scheme of things, you can keep him. But if you he's expendable now. Woody Marks, bro, he can block, he can catch, he can run. That's what you want in your running back one, because now when you line up, teams don't know if you're going to throw the ball or run it because he's just as good in both. He's not a specialty running back. So I really like him. He picks up blitz protection so well to be a rookie, man, and that's only going to get better. So I like everything that the Texans have going. I know the Niners were beat up, but it hadn't stopped them previously from winning some games. You know, Robert Saleh, solid coach. Shanahan, solid coach. Defense stepped up. They played really well. They shut down Mac Jones, George Kittle, and McCaffrey. I think that the Texans are going to compete with the Colts for this division. I look forward to when they play.
All right, guys. Reminder, this is the Wagering World. And what we do in the show is we encourage you to look out for your boys. So do that right now. Go ahead. Grab that link, share the video, drop it in your group chat, or if there's people in there you don't like, maybe just send it to your closest friends here, guys. Share some of this game. We're doing it here for you. You know, I'm here with Five Star on Monday. Sometimes he goes solo for you. And then, of course, on Friday, he's there with Ski Profit, giving you the best of both worlds, giving you those NBA winners as well. But let's keep going, man. I missed one other one, too. But one of the games I missed last night, Five Star, Tomlin is a dog, falls to 20-7 against this Fred now as a dog. And it was looking pretty good, man, and I almost cashed out. I almost cashed out because when I was watching, it just felt like the Packers kept knocking on the door, right? And I just wonder, how long can this defense hold up? And I can't wait to do the show with Tyler tomorrow. You know, Tyler's a Steelers fan, and he's down on Tomlin. But I'm going to tell him, firing your coach isn't going to make those washed cornerbacks any better, man. And when you can't get a pass rush, those cornerbacks can really get exposed. Felt like in the second half, the Packers receivers really found daylight. And with the lack of pass rush there, just clearly the better team there. So what did you see? I'm not down on the Steelers yet. I'm not ready to give up on them yet. I believe they're a home dog again. They're catching three again this week. Maybe I think against the aforementioned Colts. I'll check that out here while we continue this breakdown. But, man, Tomlin couldn't get it done. Packers continue to look good. What was your takeaways last night?
This was my biggest bet of the week on the NFL. I was monitoring it all weekend. You know, as now betting has became more of a public thing and information gets out the squares, it skews the market. And everyone in the market was talking about prime time and how good Tomlin is in prime time, which we know he's been excellent in prime time. But this team isn't good enough to win with the public on its back as well. They're really old, they're old everywhere.
Isn't that the worst when you have a public dog? Especially, I like to – I'll add Sunday morning on the ones I'm not sure about, but the ones that I love, I like to get them in either this morning or tomorrow morning, even before that Wednesday injury report comes out. So sometimes I'll have a play like that Steelers play just jumped out to me the second it came out. Cool, grab the 3.5, and then you watch it go to 3, and you just see them taking money. Listen to the podcast. Listen to your buddies. Although I don't have as many now. I'm in a real small building. I don't get the same feel with the normal guys are betting. But man, Nothing worse than a public dog there, and felt like that's what we got. And let's give credit to the Green Bay Packers, although to be honest, I think that might have been more of a statement on how much this Steelers team is kind of just being held together by duct tape, right? Just that defense is ready to go. They just kept getting older, and they haven't been able to replace, you know, the TJ Watt, who's not the same player he was 2 years ago. Cam Hayward, not the same player he was 2 years ago. Jalen Ramsey, and we've all seen cornerbacks fall off. When they go, they go. I mean, it's just
this is the thing. Tomlin won't let go of his system because his system has worked in the past. He finally let go of the offense and said, okay, let me get a real quarterback in here. Like I had with Big Ben that can kind of run the offense. He gives Aaron Rodgers the freedom that Big Ben had. He could do whatever he wants at the offensive line. And that's why the Steelers are scoring a lot more points. Made a great move by getting out the kid who's now with the Cowboys, George Pickens. He was unhappy with Tomlin's always sticking to the same stuff. That's what he was mad about. That's why he was a problem, because he was like, man, throw me the ball. So now he's at the Cowboys and a great piece for them, but they get a great replacement in DK Metcalf. So great job on the offense. Now Tomlin might have to either, I hate to say, fire Terrell Austin, because he's been a long-time good defensive coordinator in the league, and I know Tomlin likes him a lot, but they got to go back to the drawing board at least to say, listen, man, we have to get a lot younger, especially at linebacker and in the defensive backfield, and most of all, we have to change these schemes up. We've been running the
That's exactly what I was going to say, and it reminds me of Pete Carroll towards the end of the Legion of Boom. When you lose Sherman, when you lose Cam Chancellor, when you lose Earl Thomas and Browning, right? Now you can't play those guys in man consistently. Tomlin does the same thing with that cover one. You have to have, I don't even want to say elite, but you need at least above average players in the secondary to pull off that older cover one. And these guys have 10 years of film on it. I heard a pod with Julian Edelman. He says they're running the same thing that they ran when I played.
Exactly. So that was my whole handicap spread. That was the whole thing. Go ahead, spread.
Yeah. No, I mean, that was it. I'm just, you know, I love Tomlin, and I don't believe he should be fired. And I'm going to argue with this with Tyler, but they maybe need to encourage him to get a younger mind there. As a DC, you know, look at what DeMeco Ryans is doing with that Texans defense. Look at what Mike McDonald is doing with the Seattle Seahawks defense, right? And they're switching things up. Look at what blind Brian Flores does. Even Peyton Manning, I was watching the Manning cast. He was going, I'm not even sure what they're doing, right? Yeah. Peyton Manning, the all-star guy that lives in the film room, can't see it. You're doing a great job.
I'm not blaming Terrell Austin, Sheem. And the reason why is because this is, as Julian Edelman said, and as my film study said, you guys know every game that I watch it one time live, and then I watch it one time again on usually Monday
the real
morning.
Video. Because you can't see a lot on the TV view.
On the TV. I got the All 22. If you guys, I've told you guys before, if you can't subscribe to it, get the All 22, you can see everything from Bird's view where you can see where everybody's going. They're running the same offense, and I talked about it on Friday. This is right in the wheelhouse of what Matt LaFleur does, because the defense that the Steelers run, the intermediate passing game is wide open right between the linebackers and safety all day. And that's why you saw Jamar Chase, and you saw last night in the second half, after they got over the environment, got over the energy that the Steelers was bringing, the best freaking kicker in the history of football making 60-yard field goals, because Tomlin's a smart coach. He knows how important it is to invest him and Shanahan both do a great job of keeping great kickers. So, and people don't understand how important that is. I don't know when the last time the Steelers have missed a field goal. They are great with that special team. So they're a sound base. He has to get off of that defense, man. I know it's worked for a lot of years. It's kept you with a winning record. It's safe. But, man, you're going to have to change that defense. Props to the Green Bay Packers. Jordan Love ties the record for most completions in a row for the franchise, a statement to Aaron Rodgers that I appreciate everything that you taught me. But at the end of the day, the Packers is a winning organization. Long time ago, they learned about how to develop quarterbacks. And if you go through their history, they've had a lot of good quarterbacks, man. And the reason why is it's their system and how they develop them. As you saw, Brett Favre come in and be the guy. Aaron Rodgers sat on the bench 4 years or so, learned from Brett Favre, learned the offense inside out. They do the same thing with Jordan Love, bring him slow. And if you notice, all three of those guys had the same release, Favre, Aaron Rodgers, and Jordan Love. And it's because it's not a player thing. It's a way that they coach quarterbacks up there in Green Bay, man. They do a hell of a job because a lot of people don't realize the GM kind of sets the tone for the head coach. Like, they meet and they figure out what's going to be the way that they're going to approach developing guys. And, man, they have a great system in Green Bay. I also knew Matt LaFleur was just going to be too smart to be dealing with a basic out defense like the Steelers ran. And also, he doesn't like Aaron Rodgers. He was not going to let Aaron Rodgers end up getting that record as beating every team in the NFL. I think it's him and Peyton Manning who would have done it if he was able to beat his old Packers. Matt LaFleur is not they're cordial, but he doesn't like Aaron Rodgers. So, great job right there. Let's see. It's a shame. He's a Steelers fan, I believe.
Here, I'll read it to you. Yeah. But five, I've been saying this from week one. We have to move TJ Watt around. Just being on the left side, he will be doubled and chipped all game. And yes, the middle of the field will be slap open in that 3-4.
Yeah, always, bro. You're a fan of the Steelers, so you understand exactly what I'm talking about. After I saw all that public money on the Steelers, it was an easy one for me. I knew that the Packers were going to cover this guy, and this was a fire and going. Christian Watson comes back. Yeah, and Christian Watson just shows up and goes for 100 yards almost on receiving. He's going to be big in that pass game if he can stay healthy because he brings the deep threat.
Yeah, I knew I should have cashed out. I couldn't get like a nice little – it wasn't even 50%, but still, I just said, man, it just feels like you could just see that Steelers defense ready to go. Let's move on. Oh, here, I'll read what you put on the bottom of the screen.
Yeah.
Packers won the first NFL Super Bowl, a good testament to a solid organization over a long period of time. Well, yeah.
And guess who they
– to be fair, the Bears have the most NFL championships in history. So maybe not, right?
Well, but not in the Super Bowl era. He said the Super Bowl. Yeah. So
No, I'm just joking around. Like, that's a
– And guess who they played? Yeah. They played the Kansas City Chiefs. Mighty funny that both those organizations are still around and they still have the same
– But did they play them in Super Bowl I?
Yeah, they played the Chiefs.
Oh, wow. Good knowledge. I know the Chiefs won Super Bowl III, right?
No, the Packers beat Lynn Dawson in Super Bowl I. It was the Lamar Hunt, the Hunt family, who used to own the original Dallas Texans, and they moved to Kansas City. And then Green Bay's always been owned by the town, which is a really cool thing, man. They have a board, and they do a great job with that, man.
All right. Well, let's move on. Oh, was it number four? Hey, that's the one with the famous picture of the guy smoking at halftime, though, right?
Yeah,
just ripping a heater at halftime at the Super Bowl. My, how things have changed. Let's move on tonight.
That was Hank Stram. Rest in peace, Hank Stram.
All right, let's move on to tonight. Five star, as one of our favorite players is not in action. It'll be Marcus Mariota instead, under center for the Washington Commanders. I saw this high as at 13.5 at one point during the week. A little bit. I don't even know if this is money coming back in the Commanders or they just moved it the line. With the confirmation that they'll have both Terry McLaurin and Deebo Samuel out there, making a little bit easier here for the Commanders. I'll tell you what, on these Monday nights, unless I absolutely love it and I feel like I know the way the line's going to move, I usually wait. I haven't put a bet in on this one yet, but I almost feel like sometimes you just tune in and you hear me say the same thing every week. But I mean, 11 points is a lot in a primetime game. We know the Commanders are going to give it their all. And, you know, Kansas City, is it working or is it just, hey, we don't really care how much we win by until the playoffs come. But they haven't been known for covering spreads. Although this year they've been a little better. You know, the offense is looking a lot better now that it's, I don't know, fully healthy, but it's pretty close here. I still think Simmons, the left tackle, will be out. So it's not like a fully healthy team, but is there such thing as fully healthy in the NFL in week 9? Right. So a fairly healthy Kansas City Chiefs team is a little bit of concern, but my original lean here is towards the plus 11. And I know it's counterintuitive, because normally you would think, okay, well, if I'm taking 11, these points are going to be more valuable. You're probably looking at the under, but I don't think that's the case. I think if the Commanders do cover, it's because they are able to find some offense against this Chiefs defense. But hey, Chiefs defense is underrated. Of course, Reed and Mahomes get all the headlines, but the defense is the reason they won those championships after Tyreek Hill left. So a kind of, I don't know if an underrated defense, but definitely a solid defense. Do you think they shut down the Commanders? Right now I'm looking at the plus 11 and the over 48. But I, like I said, I'm not planting a flag yet. I could easily be swayed. Where are you at on this one?
Standalone game, man. You just don't really want to be lined up with the public. I know that the Chiefs are a dominating team, and we're going to wait and let the market shake out before we give a definitive side on this one. On the total, I'd probably lean the over, you know, just because Kansas City's offense is rolling right now, and I'm not expecting – I expect Mahomes to be able to do whatever he wants to do against this. But one thing to keep in mind is Mahomes is 1-6 against the spread in Monday Night Football since 2021. So he probably won every game, but did he cover, you know? So with our business and what we do, everything is about the cover. Peter says KC might be working tonight. They might, but I still think they get the win. They can't give any more games away. In the position they're in right now, they wouldn't even make the playoffs. So they'll definitely win the game. I think it's in their hands on how much they win by. All the pieces are back on offense. You know, you got Rashee Rice, Xavier Worthy. You got Hollywood. You got Tyquan Thornton. You got Mahomes healthy. As he's been late in this season, he has been this healthy late in the season in a while. He's looking spry, you know. So I don't know, man. I probably play the Chiefs if I had to do anything. I probably play the Chiefs first half. I'm seeing a -7 at even money, -105 or something like that. I just Marcus Mariota might cover it in junk time at the end, but when it's all just going to the beginning of the game and Kansas City is fully engaged, I don't know how well he'll be able to move the ball on that defense, especially with a very limited running
game. I don't think he's going to move the ball well. If you're taking that Commanders plus 11, I think that you're really counting on Kroski Merritt and the rest of the running back room there to get some yards done. But when you look at that Chiefs defense, they're kind of vulnerable through the air. I mean, this is why, like I said, I haven't made a play yet. I feel like I can make some pretty good arguments here on both sides. And just my concern is that Chiefs run defense is too stout. And that's one of the things where Chris Jones, right? You know, Myles Garrett gets all the attention with 5 sacks and rightfully so, obviously a great performance. But Chris Jones, hey, it's not showing up in the stat sheet, but when you're taking 2-3 run blockers, it makes it real easy for your linebackers to get in there and make those tackles and stuff those runs. So some of the stuff that Chris Jones does and defensive tackles in general just doesn't show up in the stat sheet. And that's kind of my concern and why I think I haven't got down on the plus 11 yet. Do you think that Kroski Merritt and the rest of that running back room will be able to find success against the Chiefs defense there?
Not really. Not really.
I mean, that's why it would feel like the plus 11 is a slam dunk. You know, Kansas City doesn't cover.
It's a big number. We've seen it all week. All weekend, the big spreads have been covering. You know, I want to say they were so, like 10-2 or something this week.
Final question then. If I'm watching this live and I decide, hey, I don't need to bet it pregame. I mean, that's one thing that we know as professional bettors. Sometimes you give the books credit and you say, hey, you hung a good line. And let me just pull my pen out and take some notes. I don't need to be involved in this one. Say I'm watching the Chiefs go up 7-0. I'm looking at plus 17.5. I mean – at what point do you think we take it? Or do you think if it gets out to 7-0, it's a sign the Commanders aren't going to stop them and maybe just keep watching?
Yeah, that's one of these games that you definitely want to play live. But if you play live, I'm hoping that somehow maybe Washington gets the ball first and goes and gets a field goal or a touchdown. And then you're in a really good position.
You go the other way of the Chiefs. I mean, you think that strategy worked. I did that two Sundays ago with the Jaguars, plus 14.5, right? When they were down 14. I mean, even the 14.5 was dead. That's why I say it sounds like a slam dunk pregame, right? Because you're getting, plus 17.5. But sometimes You know, it can be fool's gold there. So anything else you have there on tonight's game? Were you playing any player props?
Well, I have a prop, but I'll give it out in the bowling parlay.
All right. Sounds good. Five star. You know what I was thinking about this morning with the A's being so bad? I mean, the World Series is going on and I barely think about baseball. And I really think for myself personally, it's just the fandom, you know, just having your team just be a laughing stock year in and year out. You kind of get away from it, especially me. I'm not as good at betting baseball as you are. I can't believe that I am paying so little attention to the Major League Baseball playoffs. So I'm going to let you carry this segment here. The Blue Jays are heading down to the Dodgers. I mean, the Dodgers, the lineup's so stacked that minus 1.5 is minus 115. For a World Series game, that's kind of wild. What do you expect here in the World Series tonight?
Yeah, and the over and under is 8.5, but I think most of those runs are going to come from the Blue Jays side. The Dodgers are really good at home, 52-29 record at home this year. Toronto, not bad on the road, 40-41. But the main thing I'm looking at, as in every time that I'm betting these games, is the pitchers. And I like Tyler Glasnow to get beat up tonight a lot more than I expect Max Scherzer. Don't get me wrong, the Dodgers are a great lineup, but Max Scherzer has a lot more experience and success in these situations. He's 8-8 overall in his career as a playoff guy, you know, with Detroit and other teams he's been. I think Philadelphia was with. He was the number one guy in the playoffs. I believe he was with the Rangers as well. He's number one guy. You know, this is the first time that he has not been the ace of the staff. So he has a lot of experience in these situations. And I'm always trust experience, man. A guy who knows how to get batters out, get around batters. He's 1-0 in his only World Series appearance. Then on the other side, Glasnow, as I said, has not been good in October, man. He has a 5.51 career postseason ERA, and he has 6 losses. And another thing, he's faced the Rays a lot of times because Glasnow came from being a pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. So they're very familiar with him. He had a 1-4 record against Toronto, 5.82 ERA. So I'm definitely on the Blue Jays +1.5, -115 on this one. I also will give out a play in the bowling parlay about this game as well.
All right. Let's keep it moving here. Let's move to what my sport, unfortunately, because, boy, it's getting harder and harder to watch. I could not believe the injury report for game one.
Yeah.
I mean, it was game one, and these teams look like it was January. All right. But let's talk about it. The Cleveland Cavaliers travel to take on the Detroit Pistons, both teams that I have high hopes for this season. Cleveland, of course, we expect that. You know, they finished number one in the standings in the Eastern Conference last season for the regular season. Detroit trying to make a move. Did they get enough veterans? Will it be enough? Will Cade Cunningham make that leap? So I did have eyes on both of their most recent games. I did take the 6.5 from Milwaukee. Boy, Doc Rivers tried to give it away. He's too old to be working, man. I don't know why they were fouling that right at the end.
He always been working for years. He a vet.
Yeah. Yeah, man. Yeah.
He was working as a player. He's been working many years.
Old habits die hard there, but it still wasn't enough as Milwaukee got the cover. Darius Garland sat in that game. Evan Mobley played excellent defensively. And one thing I like about Donovan Mitchell is he's still kind of, for us, he's a throwback player because, boy, he's lethal in the mid-range. And when you bet against Cleveland and you watch him and he gets a one-on-one matchup and he starts working in that mid-range, it just feels tough because it's, other than KD, I'd say it's about as close to automatic in the mid-range currently here. Detroit got that exciting win over Boston. That's one of the ones where the line move saved me, five-star. I was planning on playing the Celtics. By the time I went to place it, they had taken too much money. And I said, well, I don't want it anymore. Went from 4.5 to 2.5. That wasn't nearly enough. Boston fell to 0-3, so I'm not really sure what to make of them. I thought they were going to be better than people expected this season, and maybe they still will. But Detroit got a solid win, and Jaylen Brown dropped 41 in that game. It's not like the team wasn't trying there. Just a lot of turnover with that Boston roster. It's crazy that the Detroit Pistons now have more continuity with what they have. I think this is a really interesting game. I did not get involved yet, but right now I'm leaning towards the Pistons with the well, I guess it's not really extra rest here. They've played the same exact days. They've all played, so there's no rest advantage at all, just a slight home court advantage. Like Detroit, but I'm worried. I've always kind of undervalued Cleveland last season. That was one of my weaknesses. What do you think here? My projections actually like Cleveland, but my brain likes Detroit. Are you getting involved in this game?
Yeah, if I'm going to play this game, it'll be the Cavs money line. When you're used to beating a team, I think it continues, and the Cavs are 9-1 in their last 10 matchups against Detroit. I know this is supposed to be a new Detroit, but that team doesn't – another angle for me is this team doesn't like Bickerstaff, who's head coach for Detroit. Cleveland's players all play for Bickerstaff for one season, and he left a foul taste in their mouth.
I see what you're saying, because I would say I haven't heard that the Detroit players don't like Bickerstaff. Understand.
Cleveland players don't like Bickerstaff.
Got you. That makes more sense.
And I think that, you know, he left a bad taste in the mouth of guys like Donovan Mitchell. And I think that this is a personal game for Donovan Mitchell. I'd also look at Donovan Mitchell's props. Hopefully, isn't a blowout. If it's close to the end, I think Donovan Mitchell wants to establish himself and show Cade Cunningham that, yeah, you're supposed to be next up, but I'm now. And he tends to take these type of matchups personally. So I'd go with definitely Donovan Mitchell. Probably, I think it's probably be like 26 or something like that. I'm not looking at it right now. I don't know if you could pull it up. If anyone in the chat has Donovan Mitchell's
I could pull it up real quick. One thing that with an eye on that game last night, I know that Cleveland was disappointed because around the third, they were up by 15. They really could have put their foot on the gas and maybe put away Milwaukee and got some of their starters to rest. They weren't able to do that.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things to give it there. To be fair, Detroit played their starters the whole game, but I think that the Cavaliers probably had a greater opportunity. Donovan Mitchell's point prop is sitting here at 27.5 offshore plus 100. So you can probably get 27 even or 26.5. Looks pretty good to me. The reason I was thinking about that was he did work pretty hard there in the fourth quarter there to keep that team off because Milwaukee wouldn't quit at all. And they kept turning it to Mitchell, and he was getting it done in the half court with the game on the line. Maybe a little bit of fatigue there, but at plus 100, have to consider there 27.5. Other things I want to throw out for this game, if you are right, Cleveland gets the win, it'll be the first time they've covered this year, even though they're 2-1. They are 0-3 against the spread.
Not with me, because I'm going money line on a short number like that. Give me the minus.
But that would be their cover, too, because they're plus 2.5. So it would be their first cover of the year.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it moving there. Thunder taking on the Mavericks. Boy, the guy that's looking out of shape so far this year has been Anthony Davis, not Luka Doncic. As I know, the Mavericks continue to have a lot of venom, Mavericks fans at least, towards Nico Harrison here. Cooper Flagg will probably assuage all that, but not right off the bat. These guys come in my mind, my opinion, less prepared than ever from with what the college game is and just the level of talent. I mean, these 80s college teams would crush these teams nowadays just because of how much older they were, how much more talent, experience, and continuity that they had. Regardless, you know, Flag is going to be great. I think he's playing out of position right now. Before we actually break down this game, I'd like to hear your thoughts. I've heard some people say, hey, this is a good opportunity for Flag to just kind of get some playmaking in there. Other people saying, hey, you're stunting a forward's development by making him play point guard right off the bat. Where do you stand on that argument?
Maybe Jason Kidd sees himself in the kid. That's what I see, because Jason Kidd was a big guard that could do everything, that played with pace, could rebound, limited shooter, as is Flag. Flag, yeah, he's not a bad shooter, but that isn't his best part of his game. The best part of his game is his ability to fill up the stat sheet. So with Jason Kidd being a point guard who was like that, he obviously sees something that makes him think that Cooper Flagg can do that. And maybe he's also getting ahead of the curve. Whereas in, okay, we know Kyrie's coming back. When is Kyrie coming back? Maybe second half of the season?
Yeah.
So Kyrie can, so he's the true meaning of combo guard. It's not a lot of real combo guards. People think they're combo guards, just like, for instance, my guy out there in Houston that we drafted. Bree Shepard's not a combo guard. He's a two guard. He's Jeff Hornacek. He's better coming off picks, shooting. He doesn't have a tight handle. Steph Curry, Dame Lillard, who else? Donovan Mitchell. It's not that many combo guards, but definitely Kyrie is one, and he's just as comfortable off the ball as on the ball. So maybe he sees some situations where we can go inverted. We can let Flag bring the ball up and kind of take that LeBron role, that Scottie Pippen role as the point forward, and run Kyrie off of more screens where Kyrie can catch the ball on the wing and either break down a defender, shoot, or make get an easy lob to Anthony Davis or those other bigs over there. So I see what Jason Kidd's doing. He's a very smart guy. He knows basketball. So I think he's just developing him. I don't think that that's going to be his position forever. I think it's going to be like everything is really now on a lot of these teams. It's going to be kind of positionless basketball like we've seen with the Warriors for years. You know, Draymond might bring it up. Steph might bring it up. So I think that that's all he's doing. He's just getting them used to not being afraid to handle the ball.
All right. Well, let's move on to tonight's game. Oklahoma City laying 8.5 here. Normally, you know, home dogs are something that I really look forward to in the NBA. And I thought maybe the Thunder would fall short there in game three because they had, what, two? Was it double overtime in both?
Yeah.
Feels like it was, right? So they had played four overtimes. I go, oh, maybe. And I'm happy I didn't jump in on Atlanta because I hate going against OKC. They're kind of like the Ravens and the Lions where they cover spreads.
Yeah.
they like to win by margin. That's why when you run stats, you have to be careful because their net ratings are really going to stand out. Maybe make you think, well, Thunder are the champion. But in the Ravens case, sometimes I think they make me think they're better than they are just by their ability to win margin. But they get a 17-point win. They've played two games on the road so far. They're 3-0 straight up, but only 1-2. Against the spread, as their first cover was that win in Atlanta. Of course, against both Houston and Indiana, they were able to squeak out victories but not cover the spread. And Dallas, on the other hand, had a disappointing start to the season because when you look at what Oklahoma City's done, right, they start off hosting Houston, but right now they're pretty much, at least in my mind, the number two in that conference there. That's where they finished last season. I think it's fair to give them that. Then they go into NBA Finals rematch, and I know they don't have Haliburton, but that's still the team that made the NBA Finals. Then you play in Atlanta, and for those of us who know, right, regardless of how good the Hawks are, the Atlanta is always a tough road trip. There's a magic city down there that these players sometimes don't get any sleep because of. So Atlanta's a tough road trip. They get a big win there. Then you look at Dallas, right? They're 1-2 against the spread, so you say all these teams are equal, but look who they played, man. They played the Spurs, who are pretty good, but they're not a complete team yet. You know, just a lot of star power. They're still figuring things out there, especially under the new coach. Then you, you're 9.5-point favorites, and you lose straight up to the Wizards. That's got to be disappointing if you're the Mavericks. And then they do get an impressive win over Toronto. But Dallas has yet to leave. They played all three games at home there. 1-2, pretty disappointing start here. So not all 1-2 against the spreads are created equal here. For me, I haven't played this one yet, but I lean OKC. Dallas, to me, is just a little bit discombobulated. Let's see what happens once Davis kind of rounds into shape. He's been known to kind of play himself into shape. I think because of the focal point on him right now, it's just a little more obvious this year. I lean towards OKC here. Didn't play it. What's your thoughts on this one?
I'll play the Mavs on this one, first half, +5. They've been pretty good in the first half this year. Another thing that you said, they got to be catching up a little bit with OKC. I know that SGA is a hell of a leader, good kid, but he likes to have a good time too, as you see, you know, by how the kids move around together. They know how to separate fun and basketball, but I'm sure they stopped to see a couple of their honeys in Atlanta. Had to, because every player has a female in Atlanta, Houston, and L.A., and New York, Miami. Those five places you can bet on. And Dallas, couple there too. So they're going to Dallas. Anthony Davis is struggling with Texas food. That's why he's overweight. We know it's some good cooking in the South, man. Dallas doesn't have the cuisine that Houston has, but they do have good barbecue and a lot of steaks. So I'm sure he's been eating a little bit too much. And as you said, he always plays himself into shape. I think AD likes to partake. He smokes a little bit. And when you're smoking, you're going to have the munchies and eat bad. So I think that's all that happened with him. And he'll be okay. But I like the size of Dallas. We already saw OKC struggled a lot with the Rocket size. Mm-hmm. They're going to struggle with the Mavs size and on the boards as long as the big men from Dallas come to play. OKC is still the skinny jeans team, even though they won the championship. It's based on them being a really good unit together, the love that they have for each other. They're really a team that all likes each other. There's no hate going on, and SGA is a great leader for them. So I would not be surprised if they win the game because he just figured it out. He's one of those guys who's kind of just figured it out. He paces himself. If you notice, first half, SJ doesn't even do much. He rarely scores a lot of points in the first half. But as a third and fourth, especially the fourth, he knows how to pace himself already at a young age and turn it on. So I'm looking at the Mavs first half plus +5. That would be my play on this game. But I do think that they will give the Thunder a little issues with, you know, their size up front, offensive rebounding.
All right. Five-star likes the Mavs, making me reconsider my position there. Like I said,
haven't played any NBA yet. First half only.
And, you know, it's so funny. I noticed on both NBA and NFL, I either like to hammer it right when they open or wait till tip, right? I don't do a lot of, like, midday betting or midweek betting. Either there's an opener that I think the line's going to move in the way that I think, you know, I feel like I'm on a popular position, or I want to kind of wait. And I'll tell you what, if you're playing a home dog, usually you're going to get more points. The one thing is, if like say this is tips and it's down to plus 6.5, that's usually because the people, at least offshore, it's the money they respect came in, and it's probably the right side. So sometimes
Jason
even
has a really good lose feel a point. For Mark Daniel too, man. He has a good feel for him. He's 7-3 against him in the last 10 matchups. So Jason Kidd sees something with OKC that he, you know, he's able to take advantage of, because that's, I bet you, it's not a lot of teams in the NBA who are 7-3 against the Thunder in their last 10.
Yeah, that's for sure. Good knowledge there. I wasn't aware of that. Let's talk about college football tomorrow night. UTEP is going to travel to Kennesaw State. Kennesaw State minus 10, huh? Totals 51. What's your thoughts on that game?
Kennesaw State is good. I don't know if their star quarterback, Amari Odom, out of Inglewood, California, is going to be back. He's been awesome, bro. But no fret, because their backup quarterback is talented as well. He's played well, so you don't have much drop off. But Odom is just different, man. He has a lot of size, a lot of speed, 6'4", and just an athletic beast, especially for the conference that they're playing in, the Conference USA. You don't see a lot of quarterbacks like him. But as I said, his backup will be playing Dexter Williams, a little bit smaller, 6'1", but he's really good in the pass game. I just think that Kennesaw is a much better team than Florida International. Than UTEP. UTEP did get a good showing last week as they went on the road at Sam Houston. They got their quarterback playing better, and that's Locklear. He had not been playing well, man. They had been having a carousel of quarterbacks. It was supposed to have been with Malachi Nelson, and that kid just destroyed his whole career. I don't know what happened with him. He was a five-star recruit coming out of L.A., goes to USC, doesn't want to be patient and wait his turn, and gets kind of, you know, antsy, moves to Boise State, loses the job in spring to Maddox Mattson, and now he's dropped all the way down to UTEP, which is one of the worst programs in the whole college football, and he can't even get on the field over there either. When he plays, he's thrown like 9 interceptions already in the season. So I don't know what happened to him, man, but I hope that Malachi Nelson can get his game back together and, you know, find the things that made him a five-star recruit and just isn't one of those sad stories that we see all the time where guys just couldn't make it. But I do like Kennesaw State in this one. I'm going to go first half minus 6 on this one. I think it's 6. It should be. They should be up 10 by halftime minimum, double points. Late in the game, I don't know how it goes. We got to let the market shake out. But my official play for that would be Kennesaw State, first half, minus 6.
All right, let's move on to the people's segment, ball and parlay. What do you got? You want me to start?
You kick it off.
All right, I'm going to kick it pretty close to me here. The Golden State Warriors host the Memphis Grizzlies tonight. 8.5 points is too much, 5-star. I know the Warriors have had two impressive victories, right? The Los Angeles Lakers getting the win in L.A. That was a big win. And then, of course, that home win over Denver. Then a tough loss against Portland where they rested a lot of people looking forward to tonight. But I think people are kind of sleeping on the Grizzlies and that roster because they are going to have problems when the playoffs start. And I think that sometimes people think of these teams in playoffs when we're betting 82 games of a regular season. And I'm sure there's many teams that you can bring up and we'd be like, yeah, they got no chance to win the NBA championship. They are not a contender, but I'll be betting on them a lot during the year. We always say there's three seasons, right? There's the regular season. There's the first two rounds of the playoffs. And then there's the final four teams. Right now we're betting the regular season. We got to keep that in mind. Memphis, an excellent regular season team. They got a lot of depth. They have a lot of athleticism. And they have a lot of pride, right? Let's not forget this was one of the best rivalries in sports a couple years ago. Memphis fell off a little bit, so we don't talk about it as much. But these teams don't like each other either. And when I'm taking a dog in a situation like this, right? Because we know Golden State has a great home court advantage, right? And you think, spread, why are you fading the Warriors at home? That hasn't been profitable over the last 10 years. But I want a team that's not going to give up and it's really going to come out chippy. I also like the first half here too, because I think that they might catch them a little flat footed. This game might mean a little more to the Memphis Grizzlies than to the Golden State Warriors. So I think those two impressive wins for the Warriors kind of made the price a little high for this team. It's not necessarily a buy low spot, but I do think that their 2-1 records being a little undervalued. I mean, they just beat the Pacers, who I talked about, you know, no Haliburton, but they were in the NBA finals there. Give me the Memphis Grizzlies plus 8.5.
All right, spread. So he's going with the Memphis Grizz against the Warriors. You know, we got to kick it out first with some tennis. I got two minus 200 plays that I really like. One of them is going to be my girl, Sarana Kersteja. She's playing Dalma Goffey. Goffey is a good tennis player. She's not as bad as it seems. She's competitive, wins a lot of 250s, but when she plays at this level, 500 and thousands, she's doesn't have a game to match up with a lot of the top girls. And Kersteja is hot right now. So give me Kersteja just the first set only at minus 200. I also take the young girl, Victoria Mboka. Let's go with her to go 2-0 at minus 200 against Talia Gibson. Talia Gibson just doesn't have what it takes. If Mboka's locked in, she's a 6-1, 6-2, or a 6-2, 6-3, or as long as she's locked in. So the minus 5.5 might be a look as well on the games. Now let's go to tonight's game. Nothing on the side right now on the Monday Night Football, but I do think that Mariota is a scrambling quarterback. And for them to be giving away plus 400 for him to score a touchdown is ridiculous. I think that he can. That's just a great value play for me. Around the end zone, make something happen. We've known forever that Marcus Mariota is a guy who's a dual threat guy, and I think he will use his legs around the end zone. So I'd have to try as a value play Marcus Mariota. You know, you don't want to bet, you know, 5 units on or anything like that on any prop. On props, I only bet a half a unit. But I do like him to get in the end zone at plus 400. Just too much value in that for a team that's going to struggle to find guys open. Maybe Mariota can scramble in. Also,
all right.
I got a couple more spread. I'm giving out the love tonight. Yeah, let's get out the love tonight, right? Back to Wednesday. So I'm going to give out Kennesaw State first half minus 6 for tomorrow's game as well on the college football. We're going to do that. And then lastly, let's go with the World Series tonight. I took the first 5 for the Blue Jays at plus 165. I think that the Blue Jays will be able to get at the Dodgers pitching early. And I also took the plus 1.5 for the whole game at minus 115. A lot of money going to be on the Dodgers. They're the clear favorites. The Blue Jays are the people's champ this year. People are going for the Blue Jays to Only real free agent they added was George Springer. He's been there a while. Everything else there is homegrown talent through their farm system. And you got the Dodgers trying to buy a championship. So go Blue Jays. So we're taking the Blue Jays first five at plus 165. And we're going to fade those rotten Dodgers who have gambling superstar over there, Shohei Ohtani, who had a great fall guy and his interpreter. So those are going to be all my plays I'm giving out. I'm giving out a plethora to try to get you guys to the window. Only show in the game that's giving out this many winners is the Wagering World. All right, let's get out of here, spread anything for the people before we go.
Let me ask you about one NBA game real quick.
Okay.
Just because I got you on here. So the Celtics-Pelicans. Pelicans are catching 1.5 at home. No Jaylen Brown, no Zion Williamson. So each team missing their best player. Don't you think that favors the home team there? But then I'm also thinking, I don't know if the Celtics are going to fall to 0-4. Do you have any thoughts on that matchup at all? And we don't even have to play it. I'm just wondering how you would approach it if you were to bet it.
If Boston falls to 0-4, their GM is smart enough to just go on and crash out this season. You know what I mean? Like, they'll mess around and end up sitting Jaylen Brown for most of the whole first half of the season, maybe the whole season. They know Tatum's not coming
like
back.
Like Philly, huh?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they do that. They're smart like that, though, with the Celtics. And they have enough stock with their fan base to do that. So, and they'll be there. Boston, they're so smart as fans. They'll be like, yeah, we're just tanking this year. Wait till next year when Tatum comes back and Brown, we're going to kick ass. So I would not be surprised. I've been thinking about this going into the season from the way that they have their team set up. I said, Jaylen Brown's beat up, man. I saw on that starting five how many surgeries he had at the end of last year, and he still – maybe this is the time for them just to get healthy. So with that said – we're going to learn a lot about it tonight. I think that this is a pivotal game to see what their approach is going to be because, once again, they got a head coach. He's so smart that he understands that, hey, man, we're going to tank this year, but we're going to do it by learning. We're going to play a lot of young guys. We're going to work the system. You guys are going to learn this year. So don't be surprised if the Celtics pull the Philadelphia Sixers this year. The Pelicans, talented roster, just a lot of goofies, you know? So I don't know if the Goofies are able to beat a system tonight, but who says that the Celtics want to win? You know, like the Celtics might be on the path to because they got a good draft this year. It's going to be some good talent coming out. And
I think you got a good point. It's a good matchup of talent versus coaching, right? I mean, if you flip those coaches and just the organizations, I think that individually the Pelicans have like a lot of like players. Like if they went to trade everybody off, I mean, they would be getting so many first rounders.
They have some guys over there. Ant says Pelicans money line. I can see that as well. It just depends on what we get from the former Golden State Warrior. Let's see, because he's the I guess he's going to be the head of the snake without any Zion, right? So I do like the rookies, boy. I like Fears a lot. I liked Fears at Oklahoma. He has a chance of being a poor man's Iverson in the league, man. He can go. And I definitely like the kid from Maryland that they have, too, the big center. He, a lot of touch, not a lot of athleticism, but he's one of those guys who has such good touch. As his career keeps going, he's going to be automatic from the 15-foot range, automatic from the three-point line. So, Pelicans have a good team if they keep it all together, but – my aspect on the side, I don't know. I wouldn't bet this game, but I think that this game is going to tell us a lot on what the Celtics are planning to do for the season.
All right, and Damon, you're right. I was going off CBS. CBS had them listed both out, but when I saw your comment, I think they're both questionable. I checked RotoWire, who's usually better at this, and RotoWire does have them both as questionable. I think the game is more interesting, though, just – from talking about if both of them are out, right? You're missing both your stars. It's not just superstar subtraction on one side. It's on both sides there. So that's definitely one I'll be interested in tonight. Actually, I got one more thing too. Do you have League Pass on Prime?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I do not.
You can't do even boxes. You have to have one big game and then two little games. It's like they don't want you to just have it looking like a sports book. It sucks because I have two TVs, right? On YouTube TV, I can make a four box on two 55-inch TVs, right? So kind of had eight games going at once. So if my buddies came over, we didn't have to argue about who's watching what.
Throw games up, right?
Yeah, but you can't do that on Prime. I'm disappointed. So hopefully Prime gets their act together.
But I have YouTube TV who allows that too. They allow you to split the screens, but of course they don't have – I don't know if I get all it. I don't know, because the easiest thing for me to do with the NBA always spread is just to stream. Like, yeah. I know every site to go stream from. So, you know, you end up getting all these subscriptions. As you know, I use your tennis subscription. Thank you for that. Because if it wasn't, I'd have another one. I got so many subscriptions, and you do too. You know, it ends up where you're paying $300-$400 in subscriptions a month. So, I didn't add that.
I dropped down to just the tennis, YouTube TV with Red Zone, and the Prime League Pass. I wasn't going to get it, but it's $109 for the whole year.
Oh, that's good. I might get it then. But it doesn't show nightly games, though. It's just their games, right?
It's any game that's not on that national TV schedule.
Oh, okay. So 109.
You won't get them all. Like, sometimes it'll be like, no, it's only on Peacock or it's only on ESPN. But you get a lot. It's actually a pretty good game.
Getting all the regional games.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to get that action when we get off the phone. I didn't know it was that cheap. That's a good deal. Hey, guys, we appreciate you for tuning in. It's always great to have my bro in here, Spread. He'll be here every Monday as he gets his new schedule worked out. You know, my guy made a big life move and bought a big ranch. And he's got to change some things up in his life this year, man. But that when you're good at sports betting, you can do things like that, man. And Spread is one of the best, man. So we appreciate him. Still getting with us once a week. It's no Wagering World without Spread of Stare. So I got to have him in here every week. I will be back on Wednesday. I'm hoping to have a surprise guest. I'll tweet it out first. He's pretty big in the sports betting world, but we're still confirming whether we're going to do it or not. If not, I'll be back, and I'll have somebody with me to do the show on Wednesday. And then Friday, of course, I'll be back with Ski Profit for Spread of Stare. I'm 5-star in Vegas. This is the Wagering World.